Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
The history of the gridiron for March 26 is full of surprises and some big moments, and we're going to talk about them all in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and I'd like to revert back to a time when I was a young official on a football field, and we had a game that was just one of those games where one team was just like slugging it out on the other. Kids were getting frustrated. It was kind of a real downer of a game because one team was so dominant, and the other team really didn't like it, and they weren't real good sports about it. And it started getting a little ugly and chippy a little bit at the end, and the kids were starting to get the point where they wanted to go to blows, and things were being said, and it just wasn't a very kind place out there on the football field. And we had a pretty wise referee. The referee's the head guy on the football field, and I never realized how much important they are to being in charge of that football game, that one man in stripes standing in the offensive backfield, until really got really ugly. And we were worried about the safety of the players, worried about the safety of the officials, worried about the safety of everybody in the place. And our referee, he called the game with like 5 minutes left. The game was out of question. One team was dominating it, but it was just got to that point, the sportsmanship was so poor, and both sides were getting a little ugly towards it, that he just ended the game and showed his authority. And that takes us to a great moment that happened on March 26, 1887, at a rules convention that focused on the rules of the game and empowered the referee with even more clout. The resolution was passed and stated back there in 1887, the rules should be enforced rigidly by referees, and that the captain should instruct their men against holding, roughing, and all other objectionable features. The group even went as far as making all varsity captains sign a resolution, thereby swearing to coach their respective teams to play fairly and by the rules. Also, the position of the umpire was created to help the referee. Other major rule changes from this conference were to make it a must for teams to try for a goal after a touchdown. Sounds kind of foreign to us today, but imagine that. Before 1887, you did not have to go for a try for point after a touchdown, and there was no umpire, only a referee on the field. Kind of an odd thing. Of course, the captains helped officiate then, or they were sort of advisors on the field. It was kind of a strange thing if we saw today's football game. March 26, 2001, the NFL announced that for the third straight year it had reached a record average paid attendance mark. It was the first time that the paid attendance went over 66,000 fans per game. Also, the NFL announced that the Washington Redskins set a league record for attendance in 8 games of 656,599, surpassing the Detroit Lions record of 634,204 set in 1980 for the year. Wow, those are some big numbers. Happened in 2001. Of course, you know, pre-COVID, after 2001, the NFL was just growing by leaps and bounds, and the stadiums were getting bigger. That mark just kept going up, up, up after that. But March 26, 2001, that was a record. And now it's time for us to go to some birthdays of our Hall of Famers, and so we have some tonight that have some really good stories that are really interesting and with their successes. And our first one is one of those. It starts off March 26, 1870, Knoxville, Tennessee. The standout Yale halfback from 1888 to 1891, Lee Bum McClung, arrived into this life. Bum's bio on the National Football Foundation's pages say that though individual records for that era of football are very unofficial, McClung is credited with scoring 176 points in the 1889 season alone, and 494 in his total career. Remember that back then, a touchdown was worth only 4 points, but field goals were a 5-pointer, and extra points were always 2. Yale's one loss record in his 4 years at Yale totaled an amazing 54-2 record, and the Elis outscored their opponents by an astonishing count of 2,269-49. Can you imagine that for a 4-year period? Lee McClung was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1963 after the National Football Foundation tallied their votes. In 1892, Bum McClung coached the University of California team. But bigger and by far more better things were in store for Mr. McClung, as he eventually was in charge of the U.S. Treasury in 1912. Therefore, a facsimile of his signature is on the paper currency printed in that period, written as Lee McClung. So if you go through your wallets, look for those bills around 1912, you will see the signature of our U.S. Treasurer, Lee McClung, and he was a great Hall of Fame collegiate player. So just a little bit of history, and everybody can go through their wallets now as we listen to this next one. March 26, 1899, Sumter, South Carolina. The rambling Georgia Tech halfback of the 1918 through 1920 seasons, Buck Flowers, was born. Buck actually started his collegiate football at Davidson College for the seasons of 1916 and 1917. And as a member of the Davidson 11, he scampered for a 68-yard gain in the 1917 game against Navy, per the Football Foundation's website. As a member of the Ramblin' Wreck, Flowers became a triple threat as he scored on the Auburn Tigers with punt returns of 65 and 82 yards in 1920, as well as a 33-yard offensive rush, and he tossed a 25-yard touchdown pass for good measure. Those weren't Buck's only skills on the football field. No, sir. He is credited with an 82-yard punt versus Georgetown, as well as an 85-yard punt return against his former school, Davidson. The National Football Foundation selected Buck Flowers for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1955. March 26, 1899, in Lansing, Michigan, a baby boy was born to two German immigrants, Charles and Minnie Kipke. Charles immigrated to the U.S. in 1872, and Minnie followed in 1888. They named the child Harry, and he ended up being the middle child in a family of total 7 children. Charles worked as a motor assembler in Lansing to support the group, but in 1920 he passed away suddenly, leaving Harry and his 3 younger siblings to live with their widowed mother. Harry had the opportunity to attend the University of Michigan, and Harry Kipke punted and played halfback for the Wolverines from 1921 through 1923. The NFF says that Kipke was considered the finest punter in the nation as a junior, All-American in 1922, but even more respected by the opposing Big Ten coaches for his excellence as a ball carrier, passer, and a blocker. Harry was a star player for the Wolverines, and even became the team captain in his senior year. During Kipke's presence on the squad, Michigan tallied a 3-year mark of 19-1-2. The doors of the College Football Hall of Fame swung wide open to accept Harry Kipke in 1958. Harry went into coaching at rival Michigan State in 1928 after serving as an assistant coach at the University of Missouri for 4 seasons. Then, in 1929, he returned to head up the program of his alma mater and served as the head coach of Michigan for 9 seasons, compiling a total coaching record of 49-30-5. March 26, 1960, Marcus Allen, the stud running back from Southern Cal, was born. Marcus was a good player, but in his first 2 seasons, he was often used as a fullback who blocked for Charles White, who went on to win the Heisman Trophy in 1979. The patience that Allen learned from his freshman and sophomore seasons and the blocking that he did saw him bring the team, and White, it just resonated in the young back. In 1980, Marcus was elevated to tailback, and he had the opportunity to show off his own rushing skills. The NFF says that not only did he lead the team in rushing yards, but in receiving yards as well in both 1980 and 1981. Remember, this is Southern Cal, big school. In 1980, he rushed for 1,563 yards, second in the nation. In 1981, he rushed for 2,342 yards, and he led the nation in scoring with 12.5 points per game, and in rushing, 219.9 yards per game, all-purpose running 232.6 yards per game. In 1981, Marcus won the Heisman, the Walter Camp Foundation Award, the Maxwell Trophy, as well as the Pop Warner League Player of the Year honor. Marcus Allen received the great honor of being selected for inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2000. The Los Angeles Raiders used their first-round pick to take Marcus in the first round of the 1982 NFL Draft. He was the 1982 NFL Rookie of the Year, NFL MVP in 1985, and the very first player in the league's history to rush for more than 10,000 yards while also having receiving yards exceeding 5,000 yards. Allen stayed with the Black and Silver for 11 of his 16 seasons in the NFL, spending the last five with the Kansas City Chiefs. For his pro career, Marcus compiled 12,243 yards rushing with 123 touchdowns and another 21 scores from catching passes for 5,411 yards receiving. Allen was a two-time All-Pro and played six Pro Bowl games. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined the great Marcus Allen in the year 2003. Once again, it was a great honor to have you join us here on the Football History Headlines for this March 26th. And we are here each and every day, just so you know, we don't miss a day during the year. Even leap year, we'll go 366 days during the year to just bring you that football history and preserve that football history. And we want you to join us each and every day if you can. And if you can't, if you've got to do a little bit of catching up, a couple great places you can do it. You can do it at your podcast provider. Or you can go to sportshistorynetwork.com, where we have all of our episodes posted right there, as well as a real plethora of sports information on sports history. It's a real smorgasbord. Just go there and feast on all that great sports history, not just football, but all the sports from all over the world, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And the third place you can go is to our home website, pigskindispatch.com/podcast, and you can just do all the binge listening your heart desires there, because we have all of our 200 plus episodes right there for your listening pleasure, and it's a great time to do that. So if you have any questions, comments, or any great ideas of guests or anything else, you can contact us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and make sure you check out, because 3 to 4 times a week we're going to have those special bonus editions where our football by numbers and some special guests will come on and just give you some extra football content for the week. And we hope that that fills your day and makes you forget about some of the problems of the world for just a little bit, and enjoy that great rich football history, because that's what we want to do. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.